Initial Reaction Podcast is with you once again. JP Kadoran is 29 years old. He'll be turning 30 in April.
Not a general manager of a baseball team.
That is significant, JP, that you are not a general manager of a baseball team. It does make you feel like you maybe didn't spend your life, I don't know, well enough, made the right choices to become general manager of the Milwaukee Brewers. By the way, I'm J.R. Radcliffe from Lake Country Publications and Now Newspapers.
I'm J.P. Kadoran from Time Warner Cable Sports Channel. This dude is 30 and just took over one of 30 jobs in the world running a professional baseball team. I'm really proud that I put gutter guards on my garage.
His name is David Stearns. He's the new general manager of the Milwaukee Brewers. That announcement came Monday.
And his gutters are probably littered with crap. Mine are protected.
Excellent.
So I'm ready for fall.
He could hire you and pay you $7 an hour to clean out his gutters, don't you think?
He could. I probably would, too.
Yeah.
Journalist salary. So just got done with the press conference. Nothing unexpected. He is what Mark Adonasio said. He's very confident and well-spoken and can defend himself and the hiring, and he was good.
Was there any discussion, because I actually didn't get a chance to tune in to the press conference myself, any discussion about the direction of the Brewers, any ideas he has, or was this purely, Hey, here's a guy who went to Havad, you should get to know him because he's in charge for the next seven decades?
First of all, thanks for your prep work, admitting that you did not pay attention to it at all.
What?
You just said you didn't even listen to it.
I cover prep sports. I don't cover teams that are eliminated in June.
Oh, wow. All right, anyway. No specifics are detailed because, one, he probably doesn't know any specifics.
Sure.
I mean, he's had the job officially for like 4 hours.
And actually, he hasn't even had the job officially because Doug Melvin is filling out the rest of the year. Am I right? He'll take over in October.
No, I mean, Stearns' first day is today.
He said, really?
Okay. Yeah, the first order of business is to find his office. And then as soon as he finds where his office is, then he will start working. But it sounds like Doug Melvin, because we talked with him after the press conference, it sounds like Melvin is going to remain with the team like for years.
Really?
As advising and whatever. What he mentioned was he wants to get back to the things that made him successful in the first place, which is going around scouting, meeting with players, meeting with managers, working with coaches. So apparently he's going to be around for a while. And Stearns had said, you know, there's a wealth of baseball knowledge there that he'd be crazy not to tap.
I totally agree with that mentality. And I've said it from day one. I really believe in Doug Melvin. I believe in the job he did. I don't believe, you know, like all general managers, there were some missteps. I don't believe there were enough to say that he could have done better. I think he did as well as he could, and I think he'd still be great if he were the general manager for the next 5 years. I get why they went this direction. I get why they went with a younger guy with a background in both analytics and scouting. That makes perfect sense to me. I love the fact that Doug Melvin is still going to be around. I mean, I just think, like you said, the knowledge. He built a team, and not only he does not get enough credit for not just building a winner in Milwaukee, but building it quickly. I mean, there's the sense that the only way to do it is to do what the Cubs did, do what the Pirates and the Astros did, more the Astros than anybody, strip it all the way down, get rid of everything that has value, and in 5 years, we talk about maybe getting back to a championship level, because that's perceived to be the only way to make this happen on a consistent basis. I still don't believe we have enough data to support that that's the only way to do it. I mean, I look at teams like the Nationals, who have had a lot of success. Granted, they haven't had, you know, they haven't sustained it yet, but the Mets, even, they didn't do any sort of stripping down here. They are one of the best teams in the National League. I mean, there are other ways to do it. We haven't seen enough to know if the only way to sustain it is to do it that way.
Yeah, and it bothers me because people keep talking about the Astros and the Cubs and their rebuilds and how successful they were. And yes, those two teams are really good, but they haven't done a thing. I mean, they haven't done absolutely anything when it comes to having sustained success. All they've done is, well, be on pace to win 95 games, but that proves absolutely nothing, and it means absolutely nothing for long-term success either. Obviously, indicators are there. I mean, you see good old Tony Rizzo and you see Chris Bryant. I mean, there's reason to believe they're going to be good for a while. You see Jake Arrieta. But still, that always bugs me when people talk about how, well, why can't we just do that? Or the Royals. Oh, my God. People talk about why we can't be the next Kansas City Royals. It's because we were the Kansas City Royals, and the Royals wanted to be like us 7 years ago.
Right.
And bugs me.
And the Royals, I mean, they are a good example in that they did nourish a lot of younger talent, but they also made some smart trades, including the one in Milwaukee. They built a bullpen out of spare parts. I mean, that bullpen was huge for them on their run to the World Series. And those guys were all failed from other places. I mean, you know, Wade Davis and Greg Holland were not guys that the Kansas City developed to be all-star bullpens. And that's the thing with bullpens. It's the thing with the running game. It's the thing with a lot of elements to a baseball team. Sometimes you just luck into some things. Sometimes you have a plan that goes beyond stripping it down and starting over. I do think there are other models out there. I think the Brewers could be successful as early as 2017. That's a reach, but I think it's possible because all you got to do is get in the playoffs and anything can happen. I think by 2018, this team should be competitive again.
Well, as David Stearns has told us, there's no need to put limitations on anything. So why don't we go ahead and hear from the 30-year-old who is infinitely more successful than I will ever be.
We look to leave no stone unturned in trying to find the best candidate to lead the Milwaukee Brewers baseball operations in this next chapter. And I'm pleased to say that we found him.
I'm a big believer in not setting limits for any team for any year. This is a game with a tremendous amount of variability, and we're going to take each decision as it comes, and we'll make the decision in the best interest of the overall health of the organization, and the product on the major league field is certainly a large component of that. One of the things that's been very fortunate for me is I've worked for a number of different organizations with different styles of leaders who prioritize different aspects, whether it's from how to manage people, what information is most valuable, how to structure a front office, and I've been able to learn from all of them. And throughout that process, I've been able to develop my own philosophy, taking something from each of them. And that I think as we move forward here as an organization, I'm going to be able to apply a lot of the things that I've learned from the other general managers, the other leaders I've worked for, and help the Brewers move towards a successful place. We want to be industry leaders and employ best practices across every function of baseball operations. We want to have the best scouting information. We want the best player development department. We want to use all the new information sources at our disposal, and we want to be able to combine them in an effective and coherent manner to help our decision-making process. That's what the best organizations in baseball are doing, the ones that have the ability to compete consistently year in and year out, and that's going to be our goal as well.
Do you think it's possible for this team to win the World Series here? I mean, in a market like this, is that realistic?
I would not have come here if I didn't think it was possible to win a World Series in Milwaukee.
Now, JP, you said obviously no talking about timelines or strategies yet. A lot of fans over the last year and a half have really demanded sort of a blueprint of what's going to come next. Are they going to tear it down? Are they going to try to rebuild quickly? What are they going to do? And I get irritated with that because of what we were talking about before, that I don't think there is a model that has to be the only way to do it. But I do think it's significant when it comes to Ryan Braun, because if you believe this team is only going to be competitive by 2018 or 2019, then you have to think about moving Ryan Braun while there's still some value left. His contract is very unattractive. There's going to be more and more concerns about his health. And I mean, I still think he's a star who has more value in Milwaukee than he does in a trade. But at some point, they're going to have to broach that subject, and it's going to have to be as soon as possible if they truly don't believe they can, you know, they can compete for a playoff spot over the next 3 to 4 years.
Well, I think no matter what Ulison offers for Ryan Braun, I mean, whether you're competitive next year or in 5 years, just because even if, let's say you're even trying to go for it, I mean, the haul that you would get for Ryan Braun, in theory, would still be pretty good at this point. Yes, it's unloading a ton of money, and a team would have to take on a pretty big contract. He's still a great player that you could get, conceivably, two or three other serviceable players. Hopefully one of them very, very good. So, right. I don't know. I mean, that to me, that isn't as big of an issue. And really, like, the major leagues team is kind of set. I mean,
yeah.
Yes and no. I mean, third base is a huge hole. I assume Adam Lind is coming back, so first base is taken care of. But really, a lot of the positions are set, especially with Santana coming up and playing as well as he has. Your rotation in theory is figured out. You know, I guess there's a question of what to do with Garza, but other than that, what other questions are, I mean, what Cravey or Wagner or Pena for that fifth spot or fourth spot, however you want to look at it. So my point there was that he doesn't have too many immediate decisions. I think it is more of a culture and building building a foundation for what they're going to be doing with this team and what players they're going to be targeting, both in the draft and free agency and trades moving forward.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the rotation, I'm still nervous about what they have going forward. I think those guys are nice pitchers, but there isn't none of them, in my opinion, with maybe the exception of Jimmy Nelson, do I believe can take that step forward and be a truly outstanding pitcher.
What about Willie?
He's too inconsistent, and I just feel like we're at the point in his career where I know he's still
he
young.
He should have been showing it by now. So is he like Gallardo then, where like he should be
maybe.
An ace?
I mean, I'm good with Gallardo. If he can achieve those numbers year to year, then that's a successful campaign. I don't know. Willie maybe could take a star turn for sure. I'm not a guy who believes in an ace, but I am a guy who believes you have to have some high-end pitching if you want to compete both in the regular season and certainly in the playoffs. And I don't know if I see those guys in the rotation just yet. Maybe Willie takes that turn. Maybe Taylor Youngman keeps this up. Maybe Jimmy Nelson is a star. Maybe a couple of these guys in the minor leagues flash that potential. But there isn't a guy right now that you're like, wow, I cannot wait to see this pitcher get to the big leagues. Because right now the best pitchers, Jorge Lopez and Tyler Wagner among them, could be very nice, but no aces yet. So they have to start thinking about trading guys like Adam Lind in the offseason, maybe Chris Davis, maybe Braun. I don't know, but they have to start thinking about trying to get guys who have that potential to become ace pitchers.
Well, you're a negative, and now I hate you because you bummed me out.
Well, I'm sorry, but it's true. I love the Brewers, though. I love watching them right now because there's no pressure. I don't care if they win, and Domingo Santana is the man.
To be fair, you are one of the only people I know who is still watching
Brewers
baseball.
I love watching Brewers baseball. Last year, 2014 season was terrible for me because they were good early, then they slowly, the air just let out of the balloon over the course of the year, and I was devastated watching games in August, September. I was a wreck.
I'm going to go ahead and let everybody in on a secret, and that is that I have not watched a Brewers baseball game in quite some time.
Now who's the one who hasn't done a lick of research? Huh?
I was at the press... All right, anyway, I don't think... Bottom line
I
with,
love
with
baseball,
Stearns,
what can I say?
Bottom
I love
line with
baseball.
Stearns is that this isn't something that we get to see overnight. I don't think there's going to be any drastic shifts. I mean, it's going to be years before you kind of see his impact in that, you know, the free agency this winter... trades, stuff like that, and then again with the draft and what type of players they're going to approach, which, by the way, the first draft that he will be in charge of, they should have a pretty nice pick, so not too bad. Can we move on to things that have a more tangible impact on my everyday life?
One franchise that does not need a rebuilding plan right now is the Green Bay Packers.
Hey-o!
They had a very nice Monday night against Sunday night against the Seattle Seahawks, winning that game by a touchdown, right? 24-17, is that what it was?
27-17,
winning that game by
a
touchdown
lack of
and a
preparation
field goal. I watched the whole game. I was too busy joyously, you know, dancing around the room knowing that the Packers were about to beat the Seahawks. Very good showing, in my opinion. They had maybe a couple hiccups along the way, but that offense, when it's clicking, and on two of their scoring drives, were completely clicking, looked so good. All around great performance. But there were some injuries
again,
that I'm also worried about.
Like we have discussed,
it's one of 16.
What does this mean now? In my mind, like this doesn't avenge anything that they've done in the past 3 years. I mean, those losses still happened, and those losses still hurt.
Sure.
I mean, it's. I don't know.
I still believe Seattle. I mean, they've played both games on the road. That's a team that will go to the playoffs, in my opinion. I could be wrong.
Yeah, they have an uphill climb now, and Arizona looks good.
I know, but Arizona has looked good in the past. And last year's Arizona team looked amazing.
Until they lost their quarterback.
Exactly.
Carson
Palmer went down
again.
Well, I don't know. Any team could lose their quarterback. I'm just saying, I am not convinced of the Cardinals until they really, really prove it.
Well, I'm not convinced of Seattle right now. I mean,
no,
I hear that. Green Bay Packers defense, who allowed X number of yards to Matt Forte. Sorry, I didn't do my prep work. Who allowed X number of yards to
like
Matt Forte.
It's probably like 250.
I think it was like 190.
Okay.
Gave up what, like 60 to Marshawn Lynch? 40.
Yeah.
It was 42, something like that.
Really good. They're playing really inspired, though. I mean, the things that they did not do well in the Bears game, namely tackling in the open field, they did that so
that
well
was
against
unbelievable.
Seattle. I know.
I mean, there were like three or four guys all gang tackling Marshawn Lynch.
I know.
So that was fantastic. I'm still not a believer in Russell Wilson, even though he believes in a lot of things, including miracle water.
Yes. Nanobubbles.
Microbubbles?
I don't know
something
what they
bubbles.
Are. I think they're nanobubbles, which sounds exactly
works.
Like the things that the Borg used on Star Trek The Next Generation to assimilate
right?
species. I'm never glad you agreed with me.
I figured you were.
Okay.
So I'm not a believer in the Seattle Seahawks right now. They really didn't show anything to me that would lead me to believe that they're going to be one of the best teams in the NFC.
Sure.
The Packers look great.
I do still believe in them to a degree. I agree there are some holes. I like the fact that the Packers beat a team from the NFC that could pay dividends down the road. Anytime you can get a leg up on mm-hmm. somebody, tiebreaker-wise, whatever, in the NFC, that's a big deal. And
I think it is big in terms of playoff standings and tiebreakers and home field advantage. And also, it does really set a different tone, because now that yes. you know that you've beaten Seattle, all of a sudden next week's game against Kansas City doesn't look so daunting. And then right. after that, the games are certainly easier. You get San Francisco, you get St. Louis and San Diego. So now you can realistically think, like, all right, this team could start 6-7-8-0 maybe. As opposed to if they lost, obviously they have one loss, but now they're 1-1. They might not be beating Kansas City, you know, and then you go to San Francisco on the West Coast where you haven't played well, and now you're doubting yourself even more. So I think it did present a opportunity to kind of derail the season a bit, even though, as I've stated, a little contradictory, doesn't seem like the biggest game in the world to me. But it was fun to watch. I mean, as much as I say that it doesn't matter, it was still really fun.
No doubt.
Because Pete Carroll is up there on my list. He is on the list that you don't want to be on.
Right.
So that it was still very, very fun to watch. And apparently, the whole Get Loud Lambo campaign, which never should exist in the first place,
ever.
Worked.
Yeah, they were pretty loud. Eddie Lacy was nicked up a little bit. It sounds
a
like
little
he'll
bit.
Be, well, he hurt his ankle. It sounds like he'll be okay even yeah. for the next game. It's possible he'll be back Monday night, next Monday against the Chiefs. Josh Boyd initially looked like was going to be a terrible injury. Then it looked like it might not be a terrible injury, and now it's back to being pretty bad. It sounds like he got some ligament damage in addition to a small bone fracture in his ankle. I don't think we're going to see him again. Crazy that the defensive line, B.J. Raji, has been sort of reborn after missing all of last year with a biceps injury. I mean, he has looked really, really good, and while everybody else seems to be dropping like flies, he seems to be the one who's maintained. So the injuries, like with all teams, you got to get concerned about them a little bit. At one point, Devontae Adams was out of the game, and you were wondering what was happening with him. Losing a defensive lineman is no good. Their linebacking core took a hit last week with Barrington going down. So and Nate Palmer is not good enough to play that spot. So
he did better, but
No.
Right.
I mean, I'd be nervous about him going forward. But then again, the maybe he'll get up to speed. I mean, this is a team that made Eric Walden a star for a short time in 2010. I'm pretty much confident
it's Dom Capers,
happen.
You know?
I know, that's what
Dom
I'm saying.
Dom Capers produces stars.
Yeah, I like Dom Capers. He's not beloved in Packer Nation, but I still think that he puts together enough, and then, of course, the best quarterback in the league helps as well by staying on the field.
I'm sure there's more chance of fire Daryl Bevel than there is fire Dom
Capers. At this point, you're right.
Especially coming from Marshawn's mom.
Marshawn's mom
the high school scene, we're halfway through the regular season, huh, buddy?
No, we were kind of already halfway there.
It's
difficult with 9 games. It's tough to call.
No, we know exactly when halfway point is. It was halftime of Friday night.
Okay.
We are now halfway through.
Yeah, okay. I like where you're thinking. We're on the other side of half. Well, you could also count the playoff games, 10, 11, 12.
True.
So I
don't know. That's week 7. Anyway, but we're halfway through the regular season. What do we know?
We know that Franklin, the team that we saw in week 1, is still a very, very good team. And mm-hmm. I still think Arrowhead has been pushed a little bit. They were pushed in
that's
Hudson.
That's interesting.
Pushed by Maguanago. Big-time rivalry there going to Maguanago. So Arrowhead has not dominated foes. I still think they're probably the number one team in our area. And I think Franklin is a solid number two. They really showed up against Oak Creek. Michael Carter-Williams of the Milwaukee Bucks mm-hmm. was there. And that game, big rivalry, 2 undefeated teams, Southeast Conference Championship game, perhaps. The helmet game. And Franklin won 31-3. Gavin Beck, whose numbers are not going to lead you to believe he's one of the best running backs in the area, but he is. He's scoring on kickoffs, on punts. He's scoring, you know, running the ball. So a very, very good team right now. We've talked about them before. Great size, great ability on offense, great ability on defense. They just have it all.
So they're good.
They're good.
The U dispatched Maguanago, I believe.
It's true, yeah. Maguanago up 13-3 at one point. Was looking promising. Arrowhead, though, shut him down. Managed to you know, kind of score a couple touchdowns and win a little bit comfortably, I guess. So Arrowhead is still undefeated and looking like one of the best teams in the state.
And Catholic Memorial went down
they took
to Muskego, right?
Yeah, Muskego is playing some inspired football right now. They beat Maguanago sort of in a thriller the week before. And this past week, they got a big touchdown run from their quarterback, Caleb Wagner, 70-yard run that kind of gave him some separation late in the game. He also had 2 touchdown passes. He was our player of the week. at Push for the Playoffs, which you can find at mycommunitynow.com/push. I've got it down to a science.
Yeah, apparently.
Huge win for Muskego. I mean, they're a playoff team now. It's pretty any way you slice it, they're going to go to the playoffs.
So, once again, the Class Gate is a five-team race,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, it is. I mean, Maguanago's in real trouble of not making the playoffs, which is a shame because that's a team that can hang with Arrowhead, which, as I said, I think is the best team in the state. Or at least in the area. I don't know. Kimberly is probably still the best team in the state. Yeah. But Arrowhead is amazing, and Maguanago can hang with them. That's a team. Maguanago could get to level three of the playoffs, and they may not have a chance if they don't get out of the Classic Eight. They have to beat either Waukesha West or Catholic Memorial to do
it. Wow. I said I do because I do know how good. Well,
you
I kind of
Kimberly.
Know how good Kimberly was. I was there on Friday night as I spread my talents out to the rest of the state.
Yes.
Saw Kimberly Appleton North also in the rain, just like most of the state was. Blair Mulholland is their running back, committed to South Dakota State. And he rushed for not 20, not 30, not 40 times.
What?
Not even 50 times.
What?
He ran the ball 51 times.
He's going to break.
For 299 yards.
Oh, my goodness.
And four touchdowns.
So
granted,
Kimberly liked to run the ball? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I mean, yes. I mean, I understand that it sounds insane. But when watching the game, it really didn't seem that crazy.
Really?
I don't know why that was, but... he just took every ball, and it's crazy because he is so physical when you see him. He is, you know, he's kind of a short, compact guy, just built, obviously, but he is just physical. Lower pad level than everybody else at all times. He's just, he's impressive, and they took care of Appleton North. What's really interesting is that they were down, and won't dwell on this too long, but they were down 21-7, and they came back to win. They came up, and they got up 35-21 at one point. So they scored 28 straight points. So that was impressive, mainly because they will not play another competitive game probably until, what, level two or level three.
Right, yeah.
So this was very beneficial for them. So I think that they are good. When I saw Arrowhead take care of Waukesha West, I think they were more impressive beating the second-place team in the conference
sure.
than Kimberly was. But then again, you know, I might put Franklin in my poll of, you know, top three. I might put Franklin at number one right now.
Wow.
because of see, I'm big on what are they're actually doing. I don't rely on like last week's polls. You know, I don't want to
sure.
be like a college football writer who still ranks Missouri, you know, despite their
did they lose 9-6?
I believe they won
9-6.
Yes, because they were down 6-2
game.
For like two quarters.
That's not a real football game.
So I'm, you know, I try not to rely on that. So like based on the snapshot of right now,
yeah.
which is, you know, power rankings type things, I would put Franklin, probably Kimberly,
okay.
the Arrowhead, but
okay. that's fair.
Three really good teams.
Now Blair Mulholland, yeah. nothing, not to disparage where he is going.
No,
to
you
college.
Can. It's South Dakota State
right.
and it's in one of the Dakotas. Apparently he is still open, but not likely to change.
Got
his
it.
Recruitment.
Well, okay. Cause remember Joe Schober.
I
was
do remember Joe
a
Schober.
Similar. I mean, he was a smaller running back. I mean, he's not tiny. But he wasn't
especially
huge.
Now.
Right, I know. He's a great linebacker
Beast.
For a Big Ten school now. But he was a very good second player in the secondary as well for Waukesha West, and he had a lot of skills, pretty physical, I guess. I mean, just really smart, knew how to play pretty much every position on the field. And then he winds up at Wisconsin after a really nice summer after
yes.
his senior year.
Set the state record in the Division I title game.
Right, right. Now, do you think Blair Mulholland could do the same thing? Could wind up at a bigger school later in the recruiting process?
I think he's a little too small, unfortunately.
Yeah, okay.
And
yeah.
that sucks because schools really shouldn't judge people based on that. We've seen so many examples of shorter players who have worked out.
Right, but there are reasons why. The majority
yeah.
of shorter players do not work out.
Yeah, and I mean, Blair's an amazing kid. He was a third stringer back in his sophomore year. When injuries put him into the game and he took over as a starting running back, and then they haven't lost since, you
yeah.
know? So I really like him as a kid. Got offers from everywhere, including Harvard. He was part of our Harvard story that we did at the start of the year. So smart kid, good kid, great running back. And we'll see. If I were to guess, I would guess he honors his commitment. Just,
okay.
I don't know, just because I don't think there's going to be that Michigan offer or
right.
Wisconsin offer. I mean, maybe walking on at Wisconsin is an option.
But he would, might as well just take the money then and
bingo.
Go north. Yeah.
So,
yeah, the question, it seems, is in Division One, when we get to the playoffs, who between Kimberly, Arrowhead, and Franklin,
yeah.
two of them are going to have to meet in the semifinal.
Yeah. I just pray that we don't see them until the semifinal.
Yeah, right.
You know?
And that is, of course, hard to tell at this point.
Yeah.
It all depends on you know, who gets in, the geography, everything like that. I mean, Franklin and Arrowhead could be on the opposite sides of the bracket. They could be in the same pool of
yeah.
the same regional based on how things shake
depending
out.
Depending on how many undefeated conference champions there are to take one seed.
I would bet, given the way the city conference is structured this year, so that there are probably going to be more city conference school teams than we've seen in the last couple years.
Yeah.
Because Franklin is south of the city and Arrowhead is west, I would bet that you're more likely to see one or both those guys get boxed in with other city schools before they're boxed in together. Yeah, that's my
Franklin
guess.
With the city schools, and then Arrowhead gets the classic eight, Big Eight.
Yeah, or half the city goes one way, half the other. But the fact is, those teams are all between Arrowhead and Franklin.
Yeah.
So even if Franklin gets some and Arrowhead gets some, there's still enough of a buffer where they probably would wind up in the
you
same.
You just got
geography.
Me excited for the playoffs,
dude. I love that. And in fact, pretty soon I got to get started on my
4 weeks away.
My bracketeering every year, where I look at teams that I think are going to go to the playoffs and try to imagine what the segments
you
of the
already
bracket are
kind
be.
Of do at mycommunitynow.com/push with teams that. Our locks and state bound and on the bubble,
yeah.
et cetera.
Yeah, we've got it laid out that way. We're going to get our first batch of teams qualifying for the playoffs this week. A lot of there are some that are already what you call playoff eligible, in that they pretty much guaranteed themselves a 500 record. And in the past, 500 records have all gotten in, 100% of them for the last several years, including the last few years, some teams with losing conference records. That is less likely to happen this year because, as I said, the city is restructured a little bit. But, you know, it's hard to know with the way the other conferences have realigned, what's going on in other parts of the state. I'd have to take a look at it to really see how many teams I can expect with 500 or below records to get in.
Yeah, you do a lot of work that, quite frankly, I don't want to do. So thank you for being as nerdy as you are.
Yes, I am a nerdy football
fan. In the meantime, on Time Warner Cable Sports Channel and Sports Weekly Tuesday at 6 o'clock, you can see highlights from the battle for Brookfield.
Yes.
Brookfield Central took down Brookfield East, so we will have highlights of that. And Appleton North and Kimberly and David Stern's press conference and Packers-Seahawks coverage and... basically everything but the kitchen sink, because you have that on mycommunitynow.com.
Push for the playoffs. The battle for Brookfield. Brookfield East has a kid, Sam Santiago Lloyd. He's a junior running back. He's built like a brick wall. He's just he's a square.
That doesn't seem. Yeah,
he's
that
huge.
Seems terrible. That's
yeah, okay.
Big flat rectangle.
Yeah, no, he's not flat at all. He is a terrifying chunk of humanity. and I mean, he looks like an offensive lineman, but except he's fast and. Physical, and he'll throw you around. I mean, he has had a lot of injury problems the first 2 years of his career. He was on varsity as a freshman, never got to show what he could do except in flashes. And now he's honestly, I mean, you got to watch out for him over the next 2 years, especially, you know, next year as a senior. I think we'll be talking about him as one of the best players in the state for sure. Despite his best efforts, though, Brookfield Central winning the battle of Brookfield over East. I was I wasn't sure how that would play out. They were both undefeated in GMC play, and Central got the edge. Dominic Labalarte, their quarterback, had a good game. So,
if that is not the biggest plug for that game I've ever heard of, a massive chunk of humanity.
Dude, that guy is huge.
Now I literally have to watch.
Yeah, you have to see him run the
which,
football.
Which, there are replays constantly on Time Warner Cable Sports Channel, so tune in. So that's what's up.
We are shills for our own organization.
Yes,
if
we
you haven't
are.
Figured that out already, we love ourselves.
Games
we love,
to watch this week. Do you know where you're going? Arrowhead plays Scott Memorial.
That's true. That's a big
eight.
One in the Classic Eight. I am actually going to see Oconomowoc against Wisconsin Lutheran.
Ah, the Cooney.
Yeah, Oconomowoc is undefeated at 5-0. They have a very bizarre arc here. They went 11-1 overall,
yeah.
But won their first 11 games 2 years ago, beat Wisconsin Lutheran on homecoming, which this is again, homecoming Wisconsin Lutheran, beat them 84-82, craziest game I've ever seen, probably, because actually I do have another game that might be crazier, but in any event, last year they go 1-8, they're great senior class graduates, they go from 11-1 to 1-8, not even in the ballpark. And now this year, they're 5-0. They've got a junior connection. Ben Nienhaus is the quarterback. I still don't know how to say that name properly.
You'll get it Friday.
And then the receiver is Zach Clayton, both juniors. Crazy good numbers. I mean, Ben went over 1,000 yards passing already through 5 weeks. And Clayton has, I think, eight of his 19 touchdown catches, 19 passing touchdowns. I think Clayton has eight of them. So crazy good connection there. They've been rolling up some impressive points and yardage totals, and I'm really interested to see if they can beat perennial power Wisco
nice.
And stay in line for that conference championship. Slinger is very good this year. Littleton is kind of wide open. So,
cool. I'm kind of hoping. I'm starting to look at some of the smaller school races with the Brookfield Academies and Catholic Centrals
yep.
of the world,
yep,
and
sure.
getting all those that I might be covering in the next couple weeks. The Oostbergs. Hilbert Stockbridge, huh?
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, I used to live next to Hilbert, so that's something. I used to work in Hilbert.
So there's some good conference races going on there, so might be looking there. But if we didn't cover your school, I'm sorry. Please let us know if we missed you. It doesn't mean we don't love you.
Brookfield Academy does play St. Francis in a sort of a not really a semifinal sort of look at the Midwest Classic Conference chase because St. Francis already has lost to Lake Country Lutheran. But if Brookfield Academy wins, then that sets up a big battle in a couple weeks against Lake Country Lutheran, where both would probably be undefeated. You and I both saw that game last year, so that could, on the smaller school level, that could be fairly interesting.
Yeah, still, it means just as much, work just as hard.
Oh, so, no doubt.
I believe that is it for today. Thank you for listening.
Yes, lots to talk about today. It was fun. And we will catch you again next week.
We didn't even talk about Badgers getting ejected.
Oh, yeah, targeting. Yeah, it seems like now you get ejected just for trying to make a good play. I mean,
that's football.
I know people always complain about that, but come on. If you didn't do anything intentionally egregious, how can you be ejected from a game?
All right, JR's going to go fume off mic here, but
yeah.
Thank you for listening to Initial Reaction. I'm JP Gadorin along with JR Radcliffe. Thanks, friends.